So today we are critiquing Dr. Bechara Saheli's white paper, Toward a Life Coherent Commons, which is basically a framework to rescue modern institutions from self-serving metrics by re-nesting them in living communities. But reading it, I couldn't help but feel like it's a beautiful architectural blueprint that just assumes gravity won't actively resist the lifting of the steel beams.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a key theme running through this material seems to be the shift from, you know, dashboard control to field repair. But I kept wondering, I mean, if the dashboards are locked inside heavily fortified corporate towers, how do the field repairs even get into the building?
The material presents a profound philosophical diagnostic, but the bridge between its high-level vision and the immediate friction of real-world implementation remains underdefined.
Right.
I mean, the paper beautifully outlines the great inversion and the seven conditions of the commons, but the weakness is that it glosses over the inherent conflicts, the vested interests, and, you know, the power struggles that inevitably arise when you try dismantling sovereign systems.
Like global finance or algorithmic surveillance.
Exactly. The text relies really heavily on concepts like the pedagogy of life value and non-forcing transformation. And, well, those risk sounding passive or maybe overly optimistic when they're confronted with deeply entrenched, well-funded institutional inertia.
Oh, totally. Because that inertia actually benefits from the current extractive paradigms.
Right.
We are talking about systems that are highly incentivized to just keep extracting. When the text draws on John McMurtry's work regarding the cancer stage of capitalism, it rightly identifies that these systems act like an autonomous organism, you know, conserving their own codes.
Yeah.
But I wonder if we fully considered the behavioral response of that kind of system. Because a cancerous system does not voluntarily participate in a pedagogy of life value just because the harm has been diagnosed.
No, of course not.
It doesn't look at a chart showing ecological degradation and say, my apologies, I'll stop growing now. It actively defends its growth mechanisms.
And that's exactly the gravity you're talking about. So the suggestion here is to integrate a robust, dedicated discussion on power dynamics and transitional friction.
Right into the core methodology.
Yes. The author needs to address exactly how a community or an institution practically navigates the pushback from systems invested in the status quo. You have to transform non-forcing transformation from an ideal into like a strategic toolkit for dismantling systemic resistance.
So what does that actually look like on the ground?
Well, as a concrete example, in the field method section, they could incorporate a targeted scenario demonstrating how a community might enact a covenant of repair against an active, highly resistant entity.
Ah, okay. Picture like an extractive tourism developer trying to enclose coastal land to build a massive resort that'll devastate a local reef.
Exactly. Or an international debt structure forcing a small island state into severe austerity measures. How does the local community apply field repair against a billion-dollar developer?
We need to see the tactical application of those concepts.
Yeah. The text could detail specific leverage points where citizens disrupt dashboard control from the ground up without, you know, resorting to the top-down force the paper argues against.
Oh, think about strategic noncompliance. Communities could establish localized, commons-based alternative economies that simply bypass those extractive finance systems.
Right. If you don't use their currency or rely on their supply chains for essential food and water, you weaken their dashboard metrics fundamentally.
Or, you know, take it to the municipal level. A really great approach would be to show how a community might utilize legal mechanisms to enforce the life coherence test from Table 3 directly into local zoning laws.
Oh, that's interesting.
Imagine if a city council mandates that before any commercial permit is issued, a corporation must pass the life coherence test regarding ecological boundaries. If they fail, the permit is unequivocally denied.
That is a non-forcing action.
Exactly. You aren't sending in an army, yet it is incredibly disruptive to the status quo. It makes the life ground the literal legal gatekeeper of commerce.
That is a highly effective way to translate philosophy into policy. But the text also needs to clarify how non-forcing transformation deals with bad faith actors who just flat out refuse to participate.
Right. What if a massive corporate entity absolutely refuses to yield to the grammar of enough? They might just sue the city council or bypass local zoning through federal lobbying.
which is why there needs to be a clear analytical paragraph addressing what happens when the pedagogy fails. How does the transgenerational covenant protect itself when an extractive system refuses to learn? Giving the framework teeth against bad faith actors makes the whole civilizational proposal infinitely more robust.
It really does. It takes the ideas out of the realm of utopian thought experiments, right? And, you know, looking closely at the paper, the exact kind of real-world friction we are talking about actually exists within the text itself.
Yeah, the island context.
Exactly. Okay, so what I really like about this part is how it uses the island condition to expose what larger systems conceal. It's like putting a microscope on a single drop of water to understand the health of the entire ocean.
The placement and integration of the Caribbean and small island developing states' significance feels somewhat isolated, diluting what is actually the most compelling grounding element of the entire paper.
Yeah, I kept wondering if burying this section near the end makes the first half feel unnecessarily abstract.
It really does. The weakness is that Section 8 introduces the Caribbean context near the conclusion, because the preceding 7 sections are so highly theoretical, drawing on Galtung, Maturana, and McMurtry.
Yeah, you spend pages wading through deep autopoetic theory.
Right. So the reader lacks a visceral, lived-in context to anchor concepts like life capital and the grammar of enough. The paper explicitly states that the island condition exposes what larger systems conceal, but it fails to use this revealing power to illuminate the earlier, denser theoretical constructs.
It's like testing a complex electrical circuit on a localized breadboard. I mean, the island shows you exactly where the massive global system shorts out. But if you don't show the reader the breadboard first, they have no idea how the circuit works.
That's a great analogy. So the suggestion is to weave the Caribbean and SIDS framework throughout the earlier sections as the primary running anchor for the theoretical concepts, rather than isolating it as a standalone case study near the end.
Make the physical geography of the island the lens through which every single theoretical point is viewed.
Exactly. For a concrete example, when introducing the grammar of enough in section 5.1, the text should immediately use island water scarcity or food import dependency as the primary illustration.
Oh, absolutely. Because we don't need to rely solely on abstract economic models to explain when extraction becomes harmful. On an island, the threshold of enough is an undeniable physical reality.
Right, it's the literal saltwater intrusion into the local aquifer when you overpump the groundwater for a hotel.
Showing that physical mechanism right away grounds the theory in an immediate life-or-death reality.
Yeah. And another example, when detailing the covenant of repair in section 5.2, explicitly thread in the text's later mentions of histories of colonization, plantation extraction, and debt vulnerability.
Don't save the historical context of the Caribbean for section 8.
Exactly. Anchor it immediately in the legacy of plantation extraction. Then the covenant of repair suddenly transforms from, you know, an academic ethical mandate into a burning historical necessity.
You are repairing a specific documented wound, not just a theoretical imbalance. I love that. And actually, the most impactful way to execute this structural shift would be to use the Caribbean vulnerability to climate exposure and tourism pressure as the opening hook in the introduction.
Start the paper right on the island.
Precisely. Instead of starting with a generalized list of global polycrises, which, let's be honest, every academic paper does, open the text on the shores of St. Kitts and Nevis. Vividly demonstrate the great inversion right there in the sand.
Show the reader how a tourism dashboard registers record quarterly profits, while the local reef ecosystem simultaneously registers collapse.
Yes, that moves the reader from the physical, bounded reality of the island outward into the global philosophical definitions. It forces the reader to experience the physical limit before they learn the theoretical term for it.
And moving from anchoring the text in the physical geography of the Caribbean brings up a fascinating point about where this text is anchored digitally.
Oh, the AI section. Yeah. Let's look closely at the section discussing the AI-assisted preparation note and the author bios. It's fascinating transparency. But doesn't utilizing a massive, compute-heavy system like ChatGPT 5.5 inherently conflict with the grammar of enough and the ecological limits outlined in the paper's own framework?
The disclosed collaboration with artificial intelligence offers a unique, untapped opportunity to perform the paper's thesis live within its own methodology.
Right.
But the weakness is that the document misses the chance to critically reflect on how the author applied the life coherence test to their own use of AI in drafting this very white paper.
Yeah, it ends with a note on ChatGPT 5.5 thinking and mentions that AI should be a bounded tool governed by life-grounded criteria.
Right. It asserts that the AI is placed in service of life-coherent communication, but it doesn't show the reader the ethical math behind that justification.
It's just a disclosure. It's not a demonstration. And generative AI is arguably the ultimate engine of the great inversion right now. It takes human wisdom, flattens it into scraped data, and sells it back to us as a frictionless substitute for actual knowledge.
That is the exact tension the reader is going to feel. So the suggestion is to elevate the AI preparation note from a standard disclosure into a meta-demonstration of the life coherence test in action.
Use the writing process itself as a miniature case study.
Exactly. Renesting an instrument of abstraction back into the service of life. For example, insert a brief reflective paragraph in the AI section evaluating the drafting process against the grammar of enough.
Oh, explain how the author consciously limited compute power or algorithmic abstraction during the writing process.
Right. Did they restrict the number of iterative prompts to minimize the energy consumption of the servers? Documenting that specific decision proves that the grammar of enough is actionable and measurable, even in digital spaces.
It proves the author is practically doing field repair on their own digital tools. But wait, what about the AI's language models simply being too homogenized to convey the nuance of the island condition?
Large language models inherently optimize for a kind of frictionless institutional voice.
Which is exactly the dashboard voice the paper is critiquing.
Exactly. So another concrete example is to address the transgenerational covenant by noting specific ways the author ensured the embodied Caribbean survival wisdom wasn't flattened, sanitized, or overwritten by the AI's tendency toward globalized corporate language.
Revealing how the human author actively fought against the machine's instinct to sanitize cultural memory, it turns that note into a study of resisting cultural enclosure.
Yeah. Show how the human author maintained field repair over the document by explicitly overriding the AI's dashboard metrics of perfect academic syntax in favor of lived truthfulness.
Like, literally show us a moment in the drafting process where the AI suggested a highly efficient, academically sterile phrase, and the author rejected it for a phrase rooted in the messy, lived ecology of the island.
Exactly. Show us the human overriding the algorithm. That turns the author bio section into a thrilling final act of the paper.
Because it proves that re-nesting extractive institutions is possible on a macro level, because the author just successfully re-nested the most powerful extracting technology on the planet on a micro level.
It really does. It leaves the reader with a living artifact of the theory in practice.
So, just to quickly summarize the actionable recommendations for the listener today. First, inject strategic friction into the text to explain how non-forcing transformation practically overcomes entrenched institutional power and deals with bad faith actors.
Right.
Second, weave the Caribbean SIDS context throughout the entire paper as a foundational grounding device rather than a late stage add-on.
Absolutely.
And third, turn that AI disclosure into a live demonstration of the life coherence test. We want to thank you for this profound philosophical contribution, and we warmly invite you to submit your revised work or future capstone projects back for another critique.